Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 344, and we are in Numbers chapter 23 and verse 22, where Balaam is in the midst of one of his divinations. It's not really divination, just he's basically conveying to Balak the words that God put in his own mouth. And so this is what he's saying here. Obviously, from the point of view of Balak, it looks like divination. But actually, all it means is that God is the one, the divine source behind it. And what divination generally meant is that people wanted to know the will of God, you see. And the way they did is by doing their own thing. And people are doing it to this very day. You know, they want to know the will of God, and they want to make contact with God, and they do it their own way and not as God has directed. And he's not necessarily in it. And when people seek it in the wrong way, oftentimes the wrong spirit enters in and they think that it is of God. And that's the reason why God forbade Israel and warned them repeatedly to avoid anything, you see, that has to do with demonism, witchcraft, and soothsayers, and spirit of divinations, because all that is the result of the demonic forces of Satan, the devil himself, who gets into the picture. An awful lot of people don't know the difference. If they think that it is of a divine source, and that's what they think, without knowing, without understanding, without being obedient to the law of God, without following the instructions of God, and so whatever happens, they will think it is of God. And so here, the prophet makes it very plain. The only things that he's going to say are the ones that God himself put in his mouth. And he's not going to just look to speak the word of God without being it really the work of God, the original work of God. And so this is what he's saying here about Israel, that Israel does not engage in divination. They don't need to. They go directly to God. The nations that have no contact with God, and that's basically what happens even among the people of God. If they do not have a very, very close relationship with God, being obedient to his law, walking in his path, doing his will, you see, they're going to be given to another spirit, and they will think that it is of God. And many are falling for it, and there is something, unfortunately, they're rising up among the people of God. And the ultimate of it is, as Jesus Christ warned his people, that there are going to be those people who will have signs and wonders and miracles. You see, inasmuch, if it was possible, even the very elect will be deceived. And people are falling for much less than that. And what are they going to do when all those powerful signs and wonders and miracles are performed? How would they know if they don't have a basis and a foundation in the law of God, in the knowledge of God? How would they know? Too many people are seeking for those thrills, momentary thrills, and they think this is what spirituality is all about. And so Balaam makes it very plain. And so he says in verse 22, God who brought them forth out of Egypt, speaking of the people of Israel, which means that God is among them. As it says in the previous verse, verse 21, none has beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither has one seen perverseness in Israel. As we mentioned last time, what God meant by that. And the Eternal, his God, is with him. So he's not with us. He is with him. You see? He was making a point there. He's not with Balak. He's not going to listen to his desire for cursing Israel. He's not with the other nations that they came to destroy. He's with Israel. And Israel walks in the laws of God and does not walk in their own form of worship of what they think is God. And so it says, his king is, for the king is among them, the king of Israel. And so he says, God who brought them forth out of Egypt, neither is there any divination with Israel. They don't need to use this, sometimes it is cheap form of approaching God. And that's what people go for, oftentimes the cheap way. And God makes it very plain. If you want to seek God, if you want to seek his face, you
forsake your ways, you walk in His ways, you obey His laws and commandments, and you're going to have a very close contact with Him, a close relationship with Him. If you want to enter into life, He said, keep the commandments. Well, instead of that, people go for all kind of other forms of approaching God and not the ways that He commanded us. He told us, unless you eat My flesh and drink My blood, you have no life in you. And it's important for people to realize that, because there are a lot of cheap substitutes that people go for, thinking that that's the way they're going to approach God and have a close relationship with Him. And that's the way they're going to have a lot of joy and fun and love and affection and good emotions and feelings, you know, among the brethren. Well, people who think that way become a fertile, vast field for the devil and his demons to come in and sow their seeds of destruction and division and confusion. And so it says with Jacob, Israel, he doesn't need to go for all these things. So there is no divination with Israel. Now is it said of Jacob and of Israel, what has God wrought? What is it that God had done in their midst? Verse 24, behold, a people that rises up as a lioness, and as a lion does he lift himself up. He shall not lie down until he eat of the prey and drink the blood of the slain. And this is what God had determined for the land of Canaan, all the enemies of Israel. The lion of Judah. You see, the lion of Israel. And of course, the ultimate lion of Judah is God Himself. But the lions of Israel are coming here, and they have a task to destroy all the inhabitants of the land. Not to proclaim liberty throughout all the land. You know, some people in their foolishness think that was the task of Israel. They did not come to proclaim liberty. Yes, they came to proclaim liberty from sin. And the only way you're going to do it is wiping out the source of sin. And that was their commission, to go into the land and just totally devastate and destroy everything of that culture, of that religion, and of the people. And as Moses made it very plain, you shall leave nothing that breathes. Because there was so much corruption in that land. And yet, you know, other people say, oh, that's not love. That's not, you know, loving your neighbor as yourself. You know, you go and love them, tell them Jesus loves you, and all those things, and with all their filth and stench and pollution, just Jesus loves you. Well, that was another message that God was going to deliver, and this is another message the lion is going to do here. He's going to destroy, and he's going to drink the blood of the slain. Now, that's not talking about a real thing to do, you know, drinking blood, but he's talking about the total destruction. Verse 25, and Balak said unto Balaam, neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all. You know, if that's the way you're going to do it, every time I ask you to do it, you know, it's better that you just don't open your mouth. Verse 26, but Balaam answered and said unto Balak, told not I you, saying, all that the Lord speaks, that I must do. And when God does His work, can anybody prevent Him from doing it? You see? And whatever message God wants to deliver, is there any power in heaven or on earth that can prevent Him from doing it? Obviously not. And that was basically the history of the people of God from the beginning until the end. People always tried to muzzle them, to destroy them, to shut them up, to prevent them from doing it. And they never succeed, because God is with His people. And so that's what he's saying here. You cannot stop me from doing that. You ask me to speak the word of God. I'm speaking it. You have no power to stop it. So we're in verse 27. And Balak said unto Balaam, come now, I will take you unto another place. So he's not giving up. Peradventure, it will please God that you may curse me from curse them from thence. And he's not getting the point, what Balaam was trying to convey to him. God doesn't see perverseness or iniquity in Israel. You see, he called them to obey his law, and that basically this is the second generation. They're obedient to the law of God. They have a commission, they're going to fulfill it, and no power on earth can stop it. And God is not going to be pleased with anything that you do to destroy them. And that's what he told Abraham. A part of the covenant is that they who bless you shall be blessed, they who curse you shall be cursed, because I'm going to be behind it. So all the kind of divinations, whatever people are trying to do, whatever they're trying to attempt to destroy and pervert and defile, the people of God, and poison them and pervert them, and evil spirits come among them, and unclean spirits, whatever they try to do, is not going to succeed. You see? Because God has a commission and a work for His people to do, and it shall be done one way or the other. And so that's what He's telling here. And yet, He's trying. He's trying whatever He can. Just like you're in Revelation, the devil is trying whatever he can to destroy the people of God, Pour the waters after them. Well, the earth swallows the water. All the enemies that come against the people of God, no matter what he tries, it's not going to succeed. Even the martyrdom is not going to put an end to it, because God is going to bring them back to life. So what did you gain by that? Nothing. You see? And people have to learn that when people do the right thing, no matter what people do to them, the right things shall stand and the wrong things shall fall. It's as simple as that. And so he says, well, let's try it from another place. Maybe God is going to be pleased. Still doesn't get the point. That he may curse them from thence. Verse 28, and Balak took Balaam unto the top of Peor, that looks down upon the desert. And Balaam said unto Balak, build me here 7 altars, and prepare me here 7 bullocks and 7 rams. And you see this number of 7, oftentimes the sacrifices that the people of Israel have offered. And mind you, as you mentioned in the last lesson, who is Balak? Who are his people? These are the descendants of Lot, just a few generations removed, the nephew of Abraham, a servant of God, that obviously gave knowledge and understanding to his descendants, to his children, that ironically happened to be children from his own daughters, the way it happened. But nevertheless, there was education there. There was a knowledge of the law of God. And so you see bits and pieces here of truth. And that's in essence what you find in all the world, in all the nations of the earth. There are bits and pieces of truth, and people fall for it, and they claim, well, there is truth in every religion. Of course there is. It doesn't make them people of God. And so you see this element there of knowledge. And verse 30, and Balak did as Balaam had said, and offered up a bullock and a ram on every altar. And chapter 24, now we continue. That's just continuation of the story. And when Balaam saw that it pleased the Eternal to bless Israel, he had known it from the beginning, because God already told him, the one that appeared to him before he left his country, the one that appeared on the road as the angel of the Lord, and the one that told him, I'm going to put my words in your mouth, and told him, you cannot curse them because I have blessed them. And that's what he's saying here. When Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord, it's not that this is the first time he saw it, he had known it all along, to bless Israel, he went not, as at the other times, to meet with enchantments. And in Hebrew it's nechashim. Nechashim means to divine, to guess. The word for lenachesh in Hebrew means to guess. And it's interesting that from that word also comes the word snake. Nechash. Lenachesh is a verb. And oftentimes, unfortunately, people do those kind of things without realizing the source of it. The source of it is a serpent. You see, so the very noun, serpent, comes from the root that says to guess and to divine, showing the link between the two. So here it is translated to enchantments. But he set his face toward the wilderness. And with God, we don't need to play all these kind of games. A lot of people nowadays, they think that if you have those spiritual gifts, if you have the gift of tongues or things like that, do all those mysterious things, mystical things, different things, you're going to have a closeness to God. You see? God makes it very plain. Speak to Him plainly. Seek His face. Obey His law. This is a very simple journey that you take with Him. You see the simplicity in Christ. You don't need to go through all these gyrations and magic things and things that are totally different than the normal. You go to somebody, you want something, well, you just speak plainly, you say what you want, and you get what you want. It's as simple as that. A child says, Dad, I'm hungry, can I have some bread? Well, he gets bread. He doesn't need to have this, the gift of tongues for that. You see? He just has to be obedient to his father, be pleasing in his sight, and his father will take care of all of his needs. And that's what God is trying to teach us, and a lot of people still don't learn that. And that's what the children of the devil were doing. In order to approach God, instead of just obeying his laws and commandments, and God will take care of all their needs, you know, they go to the devil and they come up with all these ideas of enchantments, of all these mysterious things, strange things that they were doing, and God forbid his people from doing that. That does not mean that the gift of tongue by itself or the speaking in tongues is evil, but it has a very, very narrow, specific reason, and that's the only reason why God gives it. He doesn't give it in order for people to draw near and close to him. It has nothing to do with that. And so, this is what we read here. He said, this time, okay, forget about all this commotion, you know, all the strange things that people do to approach God. And he did it, you know, for their sake, because, you know, that's the only way they can understand how you approach God. And he says, just forget about all this nonsense. And he set his face toward the wilderness. And he just looked over there, and Balaam lifted up his eyes. He looks up to God, and God puts, you know, his message in him. And he saw Israel dwelling tribe by tribe, and the Spirit of God, when he did that, you know, just forget about all the other foolish things that he was doing before that. And that's where the priest of Baal, oftentimes, remember the encounter with Elijah, you know, just dancing and chanting and screaming and yelling and scratching themselves and bleeding themselves. All nonsense. All Elijah had to do was just speak to God, and God spoke through him. You see? That's the way we work with our God, not through all this foolishness. And a lot of people are falling for it still to this very day, unfortunately. And I think that's how they're going to gain spirituality. You know, this is the field of the devil, generally speaking. And so as he just looked at Israel, without all this extra help, the Spirit of God came upon him. And he took up his parable and said, the saying of Balaam the son of Beor, and the saying of the man whose eye is opened. So with open eyes, he just looked at God without having to do all kinds of strange things. The saying of him who bears the words of God, and that's what he did, who sees the vision of the Almighty. And he says something here that, you know, people may not understand the way oftentimes God spoke to some of of his people. Or they would so-called, you know, fall into a trance, and that's what you read here. Basically, when people totally give themselves to God, you see, and God and the Spirit of God falls upon them, so to speak, and then he just puts his message in them. As you remember the case of Peter, when he went up on the roof, he was hungry and he was praying to God, and it says that he fallen into a trance, you know. What does it mean, falling into a trance? You know, is it just like, you know, the priest of Baal were doing, and you know, all these kind of incantations and strange things? No. He's totally given to God. He's looking at God, and God pours his Spirit upon him. You see? And oftentimes just fall down and they do it. Well, God doesn't necessarily speak that way to all of his people. When he came and spoke to Abraham, he just came and spoke to Abraham, you know, when he gave him visions, whatever it may be. But there are cases where this is the way he chooses to put his Spirit in people. And this is an example here that we see. And so he says, you know, he looks up there and he sees the vision of the Almighty, and fallen down yet with open eyes. How good! And then he prophesies, how goodly are the tents, are your tents, O Jacob, your dwellings, O Israel. And this is the very statement that is uttered by the mouth of a Jew in the morning when he wakes up in the morning prayer. And that's what you hear when you are in Israel on the radio when they start their broadcasting in the morning. These are the first words. And so every day and every Sabbath you hear this one in the morning prayer. And look where it came from Balaam, the prophet, that finally they themselves had to kill because he allowed madness into him, covetousness, in spite of the fact that he's here speaking the words of God. And sometimes people don't realize that. You can be a prophet of God. You can do the bidding of God because God makes you do it. But does not mean that you yourself are a righteous person all the way. And people have to be aware of that and careful. As Christ said, by their fruit you shall know them. And people are so quick to make a decision, well, it's of God. Okay? How about checking out the people, seeing where they're coming from, what's really in their heart? And that's important to do. And that's what God warned His people. Jesus Christ warned His people. Many shall come in My name. They're going to say that I'm Jesus Christ, and they will speak a lot of righteousness. But they themselves are not. You see, the motivation is not. They are of another spirit. And that oftentimes, you know, the innocent among us, or, you know, the fools among us, or, you know, the dumb sheep among us, you know, all kind of terminology that people are using for that because of this very reason. In other words, those who are not really wise, who are not the very elect, who do not approve all things, who do not know the law as they should, and therefore they do not use that tool, you know, the whole armor of God, and therefore they fall prey to this kind of charlatans, you know, that come and deceive them by bringing a lot of righteousness and speaking just the right things and things that sound good, and they deceive them. And so here it is. He's speaking these words, and to this very day, these words are being heard in the synagogue or at home when people pray. And so he says, "How goodly are your tents of Jacob, your dwellings of Israel, as valleys stretched out, as gardens by the riverside, as aloes planted of the Eternal, as cedars beside the water." Just like you read in the Psalms, blessed and happy is the man who does never walk astray, a person, you know, who's planted by the rivers of waters, and his branches just spread all over, and he bears a lot of fruit. And that's what Christ was saying and explaining later on, that if we believe in Him, out of our belly shall flow rivers of living waters, and we're going to bear a lot of fruit. But it has to be planted, you see, on truth, on righteousness, on a close and genuine relationship with God based on His law. And that's what He's talking about here. And His king shall be higher than Agag, you know, the king of Israel, higher than Agag. And you have to understand prophecy to comprehend what He's talking about here. Agag was the Amalekite, the one that later on King Saul was supposed to kill but didn't kill. And Samuel had to do it. Out of Agag, later on, generations later, came Haman, the Agagite that tried to destroy all the Jews in the Persian Empire. He said, if he had succeeded, that would have made it impossible for Christ to be born. And he's speaking about also about the war that God declared against Amalek from generation to generation to totally blot them out from under heaven, and He's still going to do it in the future. There is a whole generation of Amalekites today who are just as evildoers as they were in the time of the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. You see, sniping at them, terrorizing them, doing all kinds of things like that. And God said He's going to put an end to it once and for all, since Israel were not doing it as He commanded them to do. So in essence, it's saying the king of Israel is going to bring utter destruction on the enemies of God, and specific enemies of God. And so his king, the king of Israel, is higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. You see, well, the kingdom of the devil, the kingdom of Satan, the kingdom of the rebellious against men is going to be utterly destroyed. All the enemies of Judah are going to be cut off. All the enemies of Israel are going to be cut off. Babylon is going to be brought down to the ground. You see? And there are going to be only very few people left of Edom. That's what he's saying in many prophecies. And obviously you have to have a lot of background to fully understand what he's saying here. A lot of background in the law and the prophets. And so this is what he's saying here. His kingdom shall be exalted. He's going to be the stone who is going to be in the future, as you read in Revelation, manifested to all, and that stone is going to fill the face of the whole earth. It's going to cut to pieces, you know, first destroying the feet of the beast, of the empire that is going to rise, totally devastate it, destroy all the nations of the earth that rise against him. And then his kingdom shall be exalted above all the earth. So there is an awful lot of prophecy here, and the entirety of the scriptures in terms of the prophets, including Revelation, revealed an awful lot of this reality here. Verse 8, God who brought him forth out of Egypt is for him, not against him, like the lofty horns of the wild ox, or as it is written in other places, unicorn. And he shall eat up the nations that are his adversaries. It's just, you know, very vivid description. Just eat them up, devour them, and shall break their bones in pieces. And that's what God said. That those who overcome, that's what Jesus Christ said to his saints, those who overcome, he shall give them power. You see, a rod in their hand to shatter all the nations in pieces. And so the people of God will be in this position, as you read in Psalm 149 and many other places in Revelation. And they shall break their bones in pieces and pierce them through with his arrows. He couched, he lay down as a lion and as a lioness, and who shall rouse him up? Because when God is with you, who can withstand you? You see, as David would say, the Lord is my shepherd, whom shall I fear? And he ends up here by saying, blessed be everyone that blesses you. So here is repeating the very words that God spoke to Abraham. Blessed be everyone that blesses you, and cursed be everyone that curses you. So it's not a good idea to rise against the people of God, because no matter how successful you may be on a temporary basis, the end result of that is that the enemies of God, those who rise against God and against his people, are going to be totally crushed. And that's the message he's delivering here, and of course the king is very unhappy with it. So we read in verse 10, and Balak's anger was kindled against Balaam, and he smote his hands together. You know, you can imagine, you know, just very angry. And he certainly was not going to smite Balaam. He was afraid of that, so he smote his hands together, just to show his fury and anger and displeasure. And Balak said unto Balaam, I called you to curse my enemies, and behold, you have altogether blessed them this three times. And therefore now, flee you to your place. You know, get out of here. Just go back where you came from. I thought to promote you unto great honor, but lo, the Lord has kept you back from honor. And the reality is, God kept him away from cursing Israel, not from honor. And if he really obeyed God and served God with his whole being and heart, he would have received a lot of honor. But unfortunately, covetousness was deeply in him, and so he sought another way of going around it, around God. And that's what he talks later on about the madness of the prophet, you see, because covetousness will make you mad. And here is Balaam, came all the way and got nothing for it, and so he was going to find a way to circumvent the will of God, which he did, and was successful in that, at least on a temporary basis, and we shall read of that later on, for which case God told Moses to go and totally destroy all the enemies, including this prophet of God. Spoke the words of God, prophesied, and yet was destroyed by God because there was still wickedness in him. And that's what Christ is warning us about. Unless we overcome, unless we repent, you know, regardless of the fact that we are the people of God and doing the work of God, he said we shall all likewise perish. You see? And only the very elect are going to survive, and those who endure until the end shall be saved. We should never take it lightly. In verse 12, we read, and Balaam said unto Balak, spoke I not also to your messengers, you know, when you send them over to my home there in Aram, that you did, the messengers that you did send unto me, saying, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Eternal to do either good or bad of my own mind. What the Lord speaks, that will I speak. Sounds very righteous. You see? Well, what happened later on? Now we're going to find out. You know, that's a lesson for us too. Just like Peter said, oh no, I'll never forsake you. You see? I'm going to fight for you. I'm going to be with you until the end. And what happened later on? He cursed Christ three times and denied him. You see, that is a curse. He didn't curse Christ, but he cursed. You see, but he denied him three times. Anyway, we should be careful about what proceeds out of our mouth. Temporary righteousness is not good enough for God. We must endure with that righteousness until the end. And so, verse 14, we read, and now, behold, I go unto my people, come, and I will announce to you what these people shall do to your people in the end of days. So now he's prophesying for the end time. You know, whether he liked it, whether he liked to hear it or not, he was going to tell him anyway, you know, his last word. And he took up his parable and said, the saying of Balaam, the son of Beor, the saying of the man whose eye is opened, you know, as it looks to God, verse 16, because oftentimes, you know, the prophets of Baal, you know, they just close their eyes, and unfortunately, you see people do it to this very day. I've seen it, people, you know, I've seen people do it in the synagogue. Very few do it, but, you know, total devotion to God, you know, just close your eyes, but, you know, it could be also that your eyes are closed not for the right reason. And when you look at God, you look, you know, with open eyes. Now, there is a time for closing your eyes as you try to totally be devout and concentrate, and things like that. So it can go both ways. So we should never be deceived by that. Verse 16, he says, the saying of him who hears the words of God and knows the knowledge of the Most High. Now, the Most High is generally speaking about the Father, not the messenger that he sent, which is also a divine being, the one that became Jesus Christ. And who sees the vision of the Almighty, fallen down, yet with open eyes, I see him, but not now, I behold him, but not nigh. And there shall step forth a star out of Jacob, and here speaking by the angel of the Lord, but God, the God of Israel, not the Most High, the Savior, the Redeemer, who is going to come at the end time, and is going to bring utter destruction on the enemies of God. You see, and those who follow in their own footsteps, thinking that they are the people of God, false brethren, false church. And so he says, there shall step forth a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and break down all the sons of Seth. And some places were translated sons of confusion. God is not the author of confusion, and the nations are in total confusion. And many of the people nowadays, who are supposed to be the people of God, they call themselves the people of God, or they call themselves Christians, or whatever it may be, are in great confusion, divided, doing their own thing, thinking that they're worshiping God. And so this is a generic term for all these kind of people. And he says, out of Jacob shall one have dominion, and shall destroy the remnant of the city. And all the cities of the earth, as a matter of fact, are going to be destroyed with the great earthquake that is coming. So he's describing, in essence, prophecies that you will read later on in Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Isaiah and Revelation, finally. Verse 20, and he looked on Amalek and took up his parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations. What does it mean, the first of the nations? If you understand the history of Amalek, who was a grandson of Edom, of Esau, and he was the son of the firstborn of Esau from his concubine, which was a princess, the daughter of Seir, that Esau fought and then made an alliance with him, and they integrated, and gradually Amalek got to the point where he thought that he you know, being a son of Esau and also a son of Seir the Horite, you know, he has the right to be the chief among his people and the contender for the birthright that was supposed to be given to Esau from his point of view and to Edom and not to his people. And so he's the one that began advancing this notion, well, this land is mine. You see, and oftentimes, you know, whenever they could, you know, they would try to snipe at Israel and take what they could, and they're doing it to this very day with the same line, this land is mine. You know, we're going to throw you out of the land, you know, push you into the sea, or things like that. So he's speaking specifically about these people, that God said ultimately he's going to come and utterly blot them out from under heaven and from memory. And he said here, as he looks upon Amalek, and took up his parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations, but his end shall come to destruction. And that's the fate of Amalek, and they don't know it. There aren't going to be any peace treaties with them, you see, and giving back land and establishing their own state. God had determined a long time ago, we're talking here about 3,500 years ago, that he's going to totally blot them out from under heaven, and they're not going to be contending, you know, for the birthright and becoming, you know, the first of the nations, you know, of the nations of Esau, that is. verse 21, and he looked on the Kenite and took up his parable and said, though firm be your dwelling place, and though your nest be set in the rock, nevertheless, Cain shall be wasted, and how long? Ashur shall carry you away captive. Speaking about Ashur, the Assyria. And verse 23, of course, there is an awful lot of information here in terms of prophecy. We're not going to spend so much time on that. Verse 23, and he took up his parable and said, alas, who shall live after God has appointed him? But sheep shall come from the coast of Kittim, and they shall afflict Ashur, and shall afflict Eber, and he also shall come to destruction. And so he's prophesying also the end time scenario, the destruction of the enemies of God, the destruction of Assyria, the destruction of Babylon, the destruction of Edom, which is related very much to Babylon, both the physical, the old one, the ancient one, and the spiritual one, the future one, because physically many of those people went to that territory. And so there's an awful lot of information here in order to understand that more properly. But, you know, we want to study the law, not necessarily delve into prophecy at this point. Just, you know, a few little details there. And so we continue now with chapter 25. And basically we're going to see what was the end result of this whole attempt on the part of Balak with the help of the prophet Balaam to destroy Israel. He could not curse Israel, and therefore he resorted to something else. Well, if we cannot curse them, let's do something to make them, you see, bring upon themselves the punishment of God. And it's for that reason that unfortunately Balaam, you know, became a party to it. You know, he still needed some money, wanted some money. He didn't come here all the way for nothing. And so he said, well, you know, we can't curse them, but there is something else we can do, and make them bring the curse upon themselves. And that's in essence what later on the prophets talked about in the New Testament, about the madness of the prophet. You know, his covetousness for gold and silver, even though he claimed, you know, he sounds like super righteous. Well, you know, I'm just going to do the will of God, whatever he tells me to do and all that. You see? But he still had the love for filthy lucre. And that's why God says, you know, his people should not be in that category. They should abhor that. They should hate bribes. They should not be covetous. Because this becomes a downfall of many righteous people. You see, a bribe, as we read, is going to blind the eyes of the righteous. And this became the downfall of Balaam, though he would not curse God, he just spoke the words of God. So it shows you, you know, what people who can be, you know, on one hand prophets of God, speak the words of God, if they give themselves to covetousness, you see, to the desire of things that should not be theirs. You know, if you wanted to ask it from God, and if you do that the wrong way, regardless of all of your righteousness, you are going to fall. And many of us need to learn a lot of lessons from that, and not to be deceived by any leader, you know, that seems to be super righteous. And, you know, there certainly know those kind of people always to speak highly and loftily and sweetly and nicely, and they sound so great, and people say, oh, here's a great voice of God, and this is all of God, what they do, what they say, and things like that. And they don't know what's inside. And God knows what's inside. And so he warns us to be careful. Prove them. Test all things. Don't follow just anyone. You see? Know the word law of God very well. And so when we see infractions of that, we should be able to spot them out regardless who that person is, and not to follow those examples. Keep away from it. A lot of people are not doing it. Too blind, you know. They're not studying the law of God. They don't know it as they should. And so they easily fall prey to such people. And that's unfortunately what this great prophet here, that could have had wonderful opportunities with the nation of the people of God, instead of that he fell for it, and so we see the end result of what he had done here. Because he could not curse Israel, but he could do something else. Of course, it's not written here, but what we read later on, that Moses gave them commandments to go and destroy these people, and also they killed the prophet, Balaam. We should have gone back home, and after he'd done what he'd done, and stay out of it. But no, he stuck around to see his plan come to fruition, you see, and to get the silver and the gold. Corruption, covetousness, that's what brings the downfall of many. So we read here, in Israel abode in Shittim, the, you know, the very territory where they were there. And the people began to commit harlotry with the daughters of Moab. Now here's Moab that was coming to destroy them, and he couldn't do it. He said, okay, I can curse you. I can do something else. And that was the advice of Balaam and others. And verse 2, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. Imagine that. They stick around there, and they cannot conquer them. And so they say, well, you can't conquer them. Join them. And so they invited them. And, you know, the people of Israel, unfortunately, and even though this is the second generation, many of them are carnal as they can be, just like many of us. We're people of God, but many of us are still partakers of the table of demons. You know, we're willing to listen to everybody. We have our minds open. A lot of people, you know, pride themselves on having open minds. As someone said, you know, I have a sister who is so open-minded that, you know, her brains are spilling out all over the place. And that's what they've done here. Though they had known the law of God, the ways of God, they gave themselves to this. Why? Because of covetousness, of desire, wrong desire. And that's what Balaam knew. That's how he can get them. That's what the devil knows. That's how he can get us. If people, you know, seek for so-called spirituality, he's going to give it to them, and they would not know where it's coming from. Verse 2, so we read here, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. And the people did eat and bowed down to their gods. Imagine that. People of Israel, that Balak, for the life of him, couldn't curse until Balaam told him what's the weak point of Israel. And so he got them. And Israel joined himself unto Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and the Lord said unto Moses, take all the chiefs of the people and hang them up unto the Lord in the face of the sun. Imagine that, all the leaders of Israel, he says, you take them and you hang them. What happened to them? The people of God, in whom there is no sin nor perverseness. What happened to us today? You see, what is happening with us? People who should be without sin, who should know the law of God and walk in it. Are we going to end up like that, we and our leaders, so many of us, who give in, you know, to seducing spirits? Well, many have done that. Many leaders have done that. Many have fallen flat on their face, high and mighty and exalted for many years, and fell flat on their face. And that's exactly what they were doing here. And they bowed down. And of course, in their own mind, they were justifying it. You know, we're worshiping God. You see? We've got a new paradigm, a new understanding. There's nothing new. Those things have been happening since the days of old, and people are still falling for it, you know, the same, you know, cheap devices of the devil. Why? Because their eyes are not on God. They do not walk in the laws of God. That's not their foundation. And so they go for all kind of things, spirituality and philosophy and new paradigm and new understanding and new high criticism, high critic, whatever they call it, you know, all kind of names they give it. And they fall for it. And that's what's happening here. So he says, you take all the chiefs of the people, that is the ones that are involved, and hang them up unto the Lord in the face of the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. Because if he didn't do it, you know, get rid of the ones responsible for it, cut them off without mercy, God is going to destroy everyone. And God made that warning to his people at the end time. He said, remember the law of Moses, my servant, because that's the weakness of Israel. They do not remember Moses. They go for their own form of spirituality. Anything but the law. Having contempt for the law of God, and yet they want to have the spirituality in either speaking in tongues or, you know, lovey-lovey, you know, lovey-dovey, whatever, you know, kind of emotions, emotional religion and things like that. They are falling for it constantly, right and left. It's been happening for generations, for ages. That was always a weakness of Israel, unfortunately. And it is to this very day. And in the process, they get destroyed. So God basically says, cut it off. You know, take them and hang them. And destroy everyone. And so he says, you do that, so the anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel. Now look what he says here. Slay you everyone, his men, that have joined themselves unto Baal of Peor. It doesn't mean that the whole nation gave in to it, but many did. You see? And that's the only way you can solve this problem. Cut them off. Verse 6, and behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses. That's how far they went. I dare you. You see? No respect, no honor, no reverence, no fear of God, no obedience to the law of God anymore, doing their own thing. You see? And that's the spirit, unfortunately, that is found among many of the people of God today. Independence, you know, in their own mind. You want to be independent within the law, not apart from the law. Walk in the liberty of the law. That's it. Genuine independence. But you see, independence for many is basically rebellion against the law of God, so they can do their own thing. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.